Okay, so we've covered almost every part of the head in our talk. We've covered face, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, teeth, lips. Neck, and lips. We've covered a lot. So what does that leave us with on the head?
Ears.
On the head, what's left?
Hair.
That is correct. Brain. That is what we're covering. And brain, right? When you think of hair, and I know for some of you that's a challenge. I'll be in your group soon enough. What comes to mind? I don't want to know about the medical whatever, but in terms of biblical stories or history, Samson. Or things, you know, Samson. Samson's a classic, right? Samson is the one with the really long hair and it's braided, and Delilah finally cuts it off. We're going to talk about him. What else? Think of hairy people.
Esau.
Ah, that was a good one. Esau. Good. What else comes to mind when we talk about hair?
Rules of not cutting it for a young boy.
You were so close. The rules of not cutting it. Let's start with the basics. Let's start with the biblical. That's already a custom. But the biblical, there's a time when we absolutely don't cut our hair.
A Nazarite
or...
9 weeks.
Good. Okay, the 3 weeks. But again, that's custom. I'm talking biblical, where we really don't cut as part of halacha, as part of Jewish law.
Sure.
Very good. When a person's a mourner. Mm-hmm. I mean, mourning.
Yes.
When somebody's in avel, God forbid, somebody's in mourning. Okay? Can you think of any other biblical characters with long, flowing hair?
Absalom,
very good. King David's son, Avshalom. You guys are good. Okay. Can you think of other situations in the Torah related to purposely cutting or shaving hair?
Leprosy.
Wow, you guys are really good. I may have to bring in a guest speaker because you guys are all advanced. This is great. The story, the Torah tells us that there's somebody called a mitzora, what you call a leper, right? Right? Where the law demands that he has to be sent out of the camp. He has to be sent away, right? Isolation. He has to let his hair grow long. But when that time period is up and he's about ready to rejoin the community, he's obligated to shave his head to rejoin. We're going to talk about all this. What else?
The discussion about not cutting the hair, not cutting the corners, not cutting the...
Oh, okay. So now we're getting. This is great, fantastic. I'm so glad I prepared. Right? Something called peos, the peos, which literally mean the corners, and we'll talk about this mitzvah also. But there is a mitzvah to not shave down to the skin. What we'll call the sideburns near the ear. We'll talk about that. It's called a peya. Okay? What else? There's at least two other things that I thought of that are related to hair. Nothing?
You can lose it.
Oh, you certainly can lose it. I'm open to custom. Okay, covering hair, right? There is definitely brought down in terms of a married woman covering her hair. We're going to see, based on the discussion, that really is a totally separate, unrelated topic, but it definitely should be mentioned. But you also mentioned, sorry, you mentioned another custom.
About not cutting
a young boy's hair till age 3. Okay? Until he has his upsharon, as it's called in Yiddish. What were you going to say, Jean? I'm sorry.
Some men shaved their head when they took a vow.
Well, I think that's what Monroe was referring to, or somebody mentioned in terms of a Nazirite, what we call a Nazir. Okay, he's on the list. There's at least two more. These are a little less known. You guys got the major ones, and I'm very impressed. It's in the Torah. It's in the Torah. One is black and white on the Torah, and the other is a Rashi's comment, but pretty famous. Cantor, what do you do all day on vacation?
Okay, which book? I'm trying to get me down.
One of them is in the towards the end of Devarim, and one is in towards the end of Bereishis. One at the end of Deuteronomy, near the end, and one near the end of Genesis.
Joseph shaved himself before he went to Pharaoh.
Right.
Okay, he took a haircut. Okay, he took a haircut. That is true. When he left, when he was finally taken out of prison, right? Before, okay, he cleaned up well. Right? He took a shave and a haircut. Fine. Not what I was thinking of, but you're on the right track. Before that incident, it is with Joseph.
His coat?
No.
When he was in the pit, when the brothers put him in the pit.
Yeah, what about it?
I'm trying to think of
this. You're fishing.
Yes. Because you said where it is. I'm trying to come up with it.
When he first started, even before he's thrown in the pit, the Torah describes Joseph. When his father said to go check up on his brothers, right before the dreams, the Torah refers to him as a na'ar, as a young lad.
Curling his hair.
Ooh, so Rashi's comment is, he behaved very young, very immature, like a young lad. Rashi's example is that he was very focused on his hair. Strange comment. That's a beard. This is that he would be very concerned. He would check the mirror and make sure that everything was good. And, a little moose.
The Fonz,
right? And then the last one is at the end of the book of Devarim, is with a very hard story of a man who, when they go to war, and he takes a captive. Sure, I gave it to you now. Right? You got, what is it? Go ahead, Monroe.
She indicates that the captive woman, she has to shave.
Ah, he takes a captive woman. She's not Jewish. Takes her, and the Torah says, before you get too involved here, right? She's got to be with you for 30 days, and all the, one of the things that's obligated is that she has to shave her head. How weird is this stuff? It's weird. And the list goes on. We really have to figure out what is the theme about hair and then try to apply it to all of the cases you mentioned, which is not a simple task. But they're all on my list. But I have one more before we give the answer. There's a law. It talks about how often certain leaders are expected to take haircuts. Yeah, Jewish law in halacha. The highest level position, the highest position is what?
Kohen Gadol, high priest?
No. There's something even higher.
Levi?
Is who?
Levi?
No, Levite's below that. Come on, there's only one position that's higher than this.
The king!
There is a concept of a melech, a king. The king under Jewish law is obligated to make sure that he gets a haircut every single day. Every day he needs to get trimmed so that he looks perfect.
Really?
Expensive.
It's the king. Okay? You talk about expensive. I may have shared this with you. I was many years ago. We had I was davening in a shul one particular morning, and after davening, I heard clearly it was a grandfather and a grandson having a conversation. And the little boy says, "Yeah, I'm going for a haircut. Mommy's taking me for a haircut today." And, oh, so the grandfather says, "Oh, so where do you go?" He's, "Oh, I go to such and such a barber." "Oh, I go there also," the grandfather says. The little boy says, "Yeah, and Zadie, how much do they charge you?" You know? So he says, "Whatever, it's $10. He goes, "Wait, they charge me that also. Why would they charge you the same? You have so much less to cut." Grandfather doesn't miss a beat. He says, "Yes, but you know how much extra time they spend looking for it?" It's an actual conversation. I was like, wow, how perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. There's more to it, but let's take a step back. Let's see if we can start to piece this together. I think the easiest place to start is with Esav. Let's start with Esau. He's really, when the Torah mentions the first real mention of someone that has a focus on hair, it is Esau. When he's first born, the very, very beginning of his birth. Excuse me. It tells us the following. When her term to bear grew full, and behold, there were twins in her womb, talking about Rebecca. The first one emerged red, entirely like a hairy mantle. Kulo ka'aderet se'ar. Aderet is red, se'ar is hairy, a hairy brute. So they named him Esav, Esau. How does one thing mean the other? How does the fact that he was born red hair, therefore they called him Esau? What does one thing have to do with the other? After that, his brother emerged with his hand grasping onto the heel of Esau, so he called his name Jacob. The lads grew up, and Esau became one who knows trapping, a man of the field. But Jacob was a wholesome man, abiding in tents, fine, etc., and we go through the whole thing. Okay. Later on, we actually find out that when Isaac is blind and Jacob comes to take the blessing, so he doesn't want to be caught. So what does he do? He puts skin, right, hairy skin from an animal, puts it on his arms so that it pretends to be Esav. Pretends to be Esav. And the Torah there describes that he puts it on hairy because he wants to be like Esav. Why would he do that? Because Yaakov is ish chalak. He's a smooth-skinned dude. Clearly they're opposites. These are twins. Identical? I think not. Definitely not. They are polar opposites of each other. But Esav is described as hairy. But why does that make him the word Esav? What does the word Esav mean?
Complete.
Well, that's along the right lines. Esav is really the word of asu. Asu means made, done, finished. You said the word complete, right? It's already done. If I say I did such and such, I'd say ani asiti, I did, whatever. The word Esav is from the word asu, means done. He was born already done, matured. I don't know about the rest of you, but I wasn't born with a head of hair. Okay? Still don't have a head of hair. Okay? Okay, over time, most human beings, over time they grow more hair. But most babies are born pretty slick. Okay? Esav, from the moment he was born, as if he were, a teenager with a full beard, chest hair and all, everything. He's got hair everywhere. He's asu, made, done. Okay. What's the significance of this? Think about the following. If you have this big, bushy head of hair, okay, and you've got some nice, short, bald dude next to him, okay, I have to look a certain way so that nobody takes this personally. I'll look out there, okay? And he got some short, bald dude here next to him. And they're out by the granary and there's chaff, right, from the thing blowing everywhere. Who's in bigger trouble?
Hairy guy.
Oh, definitely the hairy guy. Why? Because the chaff's going to get stuck in the hair. And the bald guy, yeah, it's going to land on his head, but he's just going to do a simple whoosh, and it's done. Off. An easy wipe. Mr. Clean. Okay? The guy with hair, he's got chaff in his hair. It's a little bit of a problem. If I told you that in one regard, hair represents a certain entanglement with sin. Wait. Don't jump off the cliff yet. Okay? It can present itself as some kind of entanglement with sin. We can understand it as it applies to Esav. But let's try to understand this on a deeper level. When something gets entangled, right, means it becomes part of the fabric, part, you know, of the mesh. If it's something that just lays on a smooth surface and you're able to wipe it off, it's really considered external. It doesn't become part of the person. Okay? If you have this big bushy hair and it gets stuck in there, it becomes part of it. The difference between an Esav and a Yaakov, as again, point one, the difference between an Esav and a Yaakov is that that which gets entangled into Esav becomes part of his very nature. That's who he becomes. Yaakov, he may mess up. There may be, so to say, chaff that will stick to him, but it's really external. It just takes a little wipe to get rid of it. I'll explain. We've had in the last few parashiyot that we've been reading on Shabbat, what do we have? We've been reading about the plagues. We're reading about the plagues. And probably the two most prominent features about the plagues is that Moshe keeps warning and Pyro keeps
denying.
That's the storyline. I'm going to do this. Oh yeah, prove it. And he does. Oh, can you please get rid of it? Sure, let my people go. Okay, fine. Gets rid of it. Now what? Oh no, I changed my mind. And this goes over again and again and again and again. The term that the Torah uses is something about Paro hardening his heart. There's two different words that the Torah uses, but it's about Paro hardening his heart, or at some point God hardening Pharaoh's heart. Okay? But that's the terminology, hardening his heart. Throughout the entire 24 books of Tanakh, everything in Torah literature, you will never find that term when it comes to the Jewish people, about their hearts being hardened. You may find words like Hashmein Ha'am Hazeh, that the hearts of the people became fattened. They became full of schmutz, full of stuff on top of it, but never hardened to a point of where nothing can penetrate anymore. Paro's heart being hardened means it became, his denial became part of his very fabric where nothing can penetrate. It became internalized to Paro himself. The Jewish people may sin, and we have many, many times, but it's like the smooth, bald head that it just takes a wipe to get rid of. There's schmutz to be getting rid of, but it's not part of the fabric that becomes part of the Jewish people. Wisdom, why, just medically speaking, why is there hair on the head?
Protection.
Protection of what?
Cold. It warms my head.
Cold.
Sun.
But what's it protecting?
Your skin.
Burning.
Skin.
Well, then we should have larger, much more hair all over the rest of our body. There's an abundance of it on our head. I'd like to suggest, right, that the reason for that is because, yeah, it's protecting the most important part of your body.
Your brain.
Your head. And obviously the brain that's within it. That's the whole point of it. Right? It's the same reason why your skull is so hard. I used to think that was a compliment. So my mother enlightened me. Not exactly. But why is it so hard? It's one of the strongest bones in the body. Because it's protecting the most important part, your brain. So the hair on your head is really there as a protection. It's a layer of protection for the head. Why would I think that? It's because, like I said, wisdom, what makes you who you are,
is in your head, and therefore it needs protection. Let's talk about using this concept. Let's explore this a little further. Let's talk about the classic person, the Nazir, the Nazirite. This is the classic story in the Torah of somebody who lets his hair grow wild, not allowed to cut it. For how long?
How long he decides.
What's the minimum amount?
One day.
No.
7.
No.
30.
Yes. 30 days is the minimum. 30 days is the standard default unless stated otherwise, in which case it can go farther. Okay? But he lets his hair grow. Cannot put any kind. Obviously not a razor, because we don't put a razor to our various parts of our head anyway, right? But anything. No scissors, no nothing. It's completely do not touch the head of hair. Why? In fact, the Torah says that that act itself is what considered... Why? Where's the word Nazir, Nazirite, come from? What does the word Nazir mean?
Branch.
Better.
Shoot. No.
What's a Nazir? Nazir is a crown. He is considered... This big bushy head of hair is a crown. It's a wonderful, wonderful crown that he's dedicated to God. That's the Torah's terminology. Nezer Kodesh LaHashem. A crown of sanctity and holiness for God. Now, I don't know about you, but how does that, growing his hair, become a crown for God? How is this such a good thing? Is a Nazir, is this Nazirite a good guy or a bad guy? Just curiosity. What do you think?
Good.
He's a good guy.
Good.
Good. What?
Good.
Good. Anybody think bad? I do. I'll prove it to you. When he finishes his Nazirite service, right? He's done. He's for the last who knows how long, he hasn't cut his hair. He hasn't drunk any alcoholic beverage, not wine or anything that comes from it. He hasn't become impure by coming in contact with anyone that's died, etc. All these great things, right? At the end of his service. So first of all, he shaves his head, okay? But almost as important, he brings two offerings. One of them is a sin offering. A sin offering. What did he do wrong? I thought he's a good guy. Huh?
It's a sin.
That's what she said.
Then what's his sin?
Cutting the hair.
No. Preempting. That he's going to sin? He's paying it forward. In case I sin, let me bring it now. Smart.
No. He becomes filled with pride and vanity.
So it doesn't sound like it's a good thing. Can't hear you, bud.
Well, I'm just thinking. He becomes all puffed up. Pride.
So then why is that a crown of glory to God? Doesn't sound like something we should be working towards. Nazir. This Nazirite. You know anybody who's done it? In your lifetime? If it's such a good thing, why don't we do it?
We're not partaking of that in the world that we should be partaking of.
Oh, so he's not such a good guy. He's the Torah. Are you allowed to drink wine?
All the time.
Okay. For those who are not on furlough. Right, you're allowed to have it. The Torah says you're allowed to have wine in moderation. Okay. Just want to clarify that. Right. There is a time and a place. Okay. You're allowed to have wine. Okay. Are you allowed to cut your hair? Yeah, you're allowed to cut your hair. You have to know when, you have to know with what. Okay, but you're allowed to cut your hair. Are you allowed to deal with somebody who's deceased and thereby become impure? Are you allowed? Yes, unless you're going, fine. But you are allowed, right? So this guy goes ahead and he says, no, I'm staying away from all of these things because I want to be sanctified to God. I'm giving up wine, I'm giving up haircuts. I'm giving up any kinds of impurity. I'm giving up chicks. I'm giving everything up. I just threw that in. Just making sure you were paying attention. Okay? Torah says that's not. One second. I told you it's okay. You think you're so better that you can go ahead and forbid that which I said is okay? So it's not so. So then why? So now I'll play the other side. So if he's not such a great guy and it's not something we should be doing, then why is this such a great crown for God? That he's considered such a holy person. Sounds like pretty rough to me. Well, make up your mind. Yeah, that's the problem. He really is both. Yeah, but. And let me explain. There have been times in your life, I would venture to say, of where you hit, I don't know, I'll call it a down point. Of where you needed some kind of boost. You need some kind of inspiration. Something's got you down. And you need a good, solid boost of inspiration. You know what you can do? The Torah says there are temporary measures that you can do. I don't recommend this for the long term, but there are things that you can do for the short term to give yourself a boost that will give you a little oomph. Go ahead. Become a Nazirite. Take upon yourself some. Why is he doing this? Well, what's his rationale? Why is he doing this? What boost does he need? Clearly, this is a fellow who's struggling. Who's struggling with his relationship with God. Perhaps he's even struggling a little bit with himself. He's struggling with whatever. He's finding that the outside influences are really getting to him. And he just doesn't have the inner courage to say, I won't do it. Or I will do what I'm supposed to. He needs to take a time out from life. He needs to take a step away from society and interacting with community. And you know what he's doing? He's isolating himself. Because that's effectively what's being done here. He's not drinking. That means he's not being very sociable. Let's call a spade a spade. That's really what it is. Drinking wine is not just whether it's good or not good. It's really the mechanism of how we socialize. It's for that reason, by the way, that the Torah prohibits Jews and non-Jews sitting down to a cup of wine. You ever hear of this thing called the Yain Mevushel, right? It's cooked wine. What's this whole concept? It's because the Torah, the rabbis want to put some kind of barrier to say, it's not just that we're all the same, we're intermingling. There needs to be some kind of differentiation. And the mechanism by which everything goes smoothly is over wine. So if I tell you, you know what? You can only have inferior kind of wine, because that's what boiling the wine does. It takes it down a notch. If you ask real wine connoisseurs, they will tell you in a heartbeat about the difference in taste about cooked wine and not and uncooked wine. This is part of the issue. So the mechanism of socializing with people is very often over drinks. This is nothing new. Long before the bars came around. This is old news, folks. So this Nazirite is taking a step away. No wine, no socializing. I'm letting my hair grow. Picture a guy who's got his hair all over the place. What kind of guy is you thinking of? I'm waiting to hear someone say a particular word.
A wild hair.
A wild hair. What kind of, you know, interaction with society?
Homeless.
Hobo, hermit. Those are the kinds of people we think. Why? Because that's very classic. The one who's very involved in the day-to-day, right? He's much more kempt. He's much more put together. That's the way he deals in society. But the guy who's got the wild hair all over the place, the mad scientist, he's in his lab doing something nefarious all by himself. He's not interacting with people. This Nazir, I don't want to paint him as this bad guy. He needs to take a moment, a break, and to get his life in order spiritually. There's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. In fact, think about it. He goes ahead and he disassociates, he isolates himself. And after that period of time of, let's say, 30 days, where he has had the time to think it through, get it straight, get it in order, the Torah demands of him, what?
Cut his hair.
What if I told you, what I alluded to before, that hair is a protection? What if I changed the wording instead of protection? What if I put the word force field? What if a force field?
Okay.
It's a little bit of a spiritual bubble that you put around yourself. When you let your hair grow long, what you're saying is, I'm not associating with society. I'm focusing internally, isolating myself.
Kind of like an aura, maybe?
An aura. It's more symbolic. I don't mean it in a physical or a spiritual sense that he's literally created a force field. But symbolically, when he lets the hair grow, he's building up a buffer system. Like you all told me, it's there to protect. So what if I told you instead of 2 inches, it's 8 inches? What if I told you instead of 8 inches, he lets it grow to 14 inches? He's got himself a nice big buffer zone between him and society. For a Nazirite, for a short temporary period of time, that's okay. And that's why it's a crown of glory. Because his intention is, not because he disassociates with people, he needs time to get himself in order.
So is it a minimum 30 days, or at 30 days he has to...
He can say, I can do it for longer.
Okay.
He can do it for longer. If it just says, I'm taking upon myself this Nazirite vow, blah, 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 without a defined time limit, right, it's 30 days.
Okay.
That's the default. He can go beyond that. Okay? But the concept is that he's really doing this to get himself straight again. He's trying to get himself in order in his relationship with himself, his relationship with God, and his relationship with Torah. Whatever it is spiritually, he's trying to get himself back. This is what the Nazir does. But when he's done with that, and he's being reintegrated back into society, what does he do? He has to shave his head. Take down that force field. Take down that protection and learn to interact with people again. Not a good idea, not advice. It's duty. It's an obligation. He has to get back with society again. Yep. Yep. The same could be said with your leper, Monroe. I hate to use the word, but allow me the Hebrew, mitzora. The one who has tsaras. It's called leprosy, but when we used to do a parsha class, I made a real point of saying it's not what the dermatological issue called leprosy. It's not. It's a whole different thing. Okay? It looks and it has appearances like it, but it's a spiritual malady. It's not a physical per se. Okay? But let's just use the Hebrew word called a mitzora, the leper. Okay? A mitzora. His obligation, when he has that tsaras, he's obligated to, again, isolate outside the community. How did he get it in the first place? What's the classic sin that he transgressed that he now all of a sudden has this tsaras? Lashon hara. He gossiped about other people. He built the wall between he and someone else. That's what gossip is. You're putting a wedge between people. When I start telling a third person about something you did, you're building walls to separate people, to wedge. He's out in isolation. He's in isolation. He lets his hair grow long. He's got to look internally. It's time for him to do his own accounting and say, what have I done wrong? I need to focus internally. But when he's done with that process and he's ready to come back in, says the Torah, shave your head. Rejoin the community. Recognize that. How about the Levites? When the Levites were finally appointed and inaugurated into their service of God as the representatives in the Torah, right? In the tabernacle, in the temple, the Levites. What was part of their initiation?
Shaving
their head. Why? Because what am I trying to get across is that when you grow the hair, who's the focus?
You.
You are. It's all focused inward. You. When you shave your head and you get rid of that, it's not me. Rather, it's for someone or something else that you're dedicating. It all makes sense. The Levites, who are the representatives on behalf of the Jewish people, on behalf of God, yeah, to initiate them into the service, of course you're going to shave their heads. Because it's not about them. It's about their service to the people. Who shaves them? In this particular inauguration, who was the person to shave the Levites? Moses. Why?
Well, he was the big guy.
But think about it. Based on what I'm telling you, that the whole point of the Levites shaving their heads is to understand that they're working for someone, on behalf of someone. They have to be humble enough to subject themselves to do service for someone. Well, the big gun isn't just because he's the big gun. They are the ones to say, Moshe, what are we to do? You are to give us direction. You're the one. Therefore, he shaved them. Shaving of the hair is exactly what it stands for, and that is, I am submitting and subjugating myself willingly under the rule for someone else. That's what shaving does. Any questions so far?
Well, I guess you'll eventually get there, but as far as any, what defines hair as far as length of hair, in other words, if I wanted to grow my hair a foot out here, but I could still, I'd get a haircut, but I mean, I'd be cutting my hair, but my hair would not be part of, as viewed of a normal society. Something like that.
I don't know if there's a definitive number, to the best of my knowledge. It only really has practical ramifications to a point of where, let's say, for example, when a person puts on tefillin, right? So where is it supposed to sit on the head? Not farther than where the hairline used to be. Or where the hairline was once upon a time. That's the point. It shouldn't go past there, right? But, it also, if you have, you know, a thick, I don't know if you can use this word anymore, right? A big afro, right? And it's really, right? And the tefillin are basically sitting, so, yeah, that's a problem. Because the tefillin are really supposed to be on the head. There could come a point of where there's so much hair between the tefillin and the head itself that that acts as a separation. That's a problem. It, to the best of my knowledge, nowhere in halacha does it say 1 inch, 2 inch, 2.2 inches. There's no such number. But if it gets to a point of where clearly there's so much hair, that presents a problem. So, again, I don't have a definitive number. How big the... I think some of it is societal. But in halacha, it does talk about what we call a chatzitza, a separation that's going to mess up in terms of the tefillin. Okay? So again, the Nazir is withdrawing within himself into isolation because he's focused on the task of working on himself, his relationship. Even in the verse itself, when it says this crown that he wears, so to say, it says Nazir Elokav. It's the crown of his God. I mean his God as opposed to...
Our God.
Yeah, I mean, what does that mean? Isn't it the same guy? But what does it mean? Right. It's personalized because that's what he's focused on. He wants to build that relationship with his God. Of course, it's our God. But his focus is isolating so that he can do his internal calculation to develop and nurture that relationship. He feels the need to put up, so to say, that force field to protect him from the outside influences. But, as I said, at the end of that term, he has to shave his head, right? And the way I'm explaining it is that it's okay to temporarily be isolated and focused on ourselves if and only if it leads to rejoining the community. Not as good advice, but as an obligation, as a duty. There's your Nazir. It now explains Esav is a hairy guy because Esav is about self. Esav is all about him. It's all about what pleasures he can have. How can he manipulate the situation so that he gets the blessing from his father, so he's duping his father into thinking what a great guy he is? That's what Esav's all about. Because he's focused on self. The bigger the afro, the bigger the hair, the more self-centered you are. Yosef, when he's 17 years old, and the Torah describes him, right before he starts sharing his dreams, as a na'ar, as this youth, this lad, Rashi told us we had, and he played with his hair. Why is that so significant? What is Yosef's behavior at this point in his life?
He's into himself.
He's immature, very focused on himself. Now, it's true. His dreams are a level of prophecy. That's true. But it doesn't change the fact that the method by which he went about it was very youngish. It was very, very self-centered. And that's what that's why our sages pinpoint and say, why is he called a lad? Yeah, because he played with his hair. He was so focused on his internal, about me, 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 about himself.
Okay, where does the red come from?
With Esav? It represents a different trait. I don't want to get too much into colors. We are going to talk about black versus gray versus white. And that we're young, we have black hair, and older, we get white hair. We do have something about that. Red is a different aspect. Red is a certain element of emotional rage. Fire red. Red is a passion, right? Hot coal. It's red.
I'm thinking of genes and biology and all of that stuff. Where did the red come from?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, ask him. I don't know. But let's take this further. Let's take this a little bit further. How about the fact that, let's talk about Avshalom, right? Let's fill in a couple of stories here. King David, heard of him?
I hope so.
Okay. King David has a son. His name is Avshalom. Avshalom, good guy or bad guy? Don't know. You didn't read the story. Monroe's not willing to. He's a good guy. Did it end with a question or an exclamation? It's more like a dot 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 dot.
It's a definition of what's good. It means.
Oh. Okay. From our perspective, Avshalom, unfortunately, is not going to go down in history as one of the better people. He's really not. For many, many reasons. Most of which has to do with the fact that he himself was one of the major thorns in King David's life. He tried to overthrow his father as the king. Not exactly good. He duped, so to say, his father in allowing this fellow by the name of Amnon, who Avshalom wanted to kill, right? He had his father travel with him. He had King David and Amnon travel. And of course, on the way, he makes sure that that Amnon is killed. There's many, many stories regarding Avshalom. But what you find is that the Talmud says the following. The Talmud says that he boasted of his hair, therefore he was hanged by his hair. Avshalom was a handsome guy, and he made a point of fixing up his hair. The Tanakh talks in the story about his hair, and he was very focused on it, and he used it very persuasive in terms of getting people. He gained popularity because of his appearance, and he used that to his advantage, and he boasted of his hair continuously. The ending, how is Avshalom ultimately killed? Anybody?
You just said he was hung by his
hair. How?
His hair gets grown on a
tree. Yes. He's riding some, I forget if it's a mule or a horse, I forget, whatever animal he's riding. And there were low-hanging branches. And when you have a nice big head of hair, what happens? Oh, it got entangled into the branches. And the animal keeps going forward. He's left hanging by his hair. He wants to kill himself, whatever. The bottom line is that is ultimately his destruction. Forgive me. Let me be the heretic for 2 minutes. Okay, fine. It's a great story, popular. We can probably write a great children's book and make millions on it. Okay? Unless the Torah is copyrighted already. Okay? But who cares? Who really cares? And if he died because he died in his sleep, would that have changed anything? Or he died because he fell over a cliff? What the heck is the difference whether he was hanged by his hair or not? What difference does it make?
Because it shows that vanity isn't good.
No, it's not just vanity. Because it could be other things that a person can focus on with their appearance, not just hair.
But they're all being vain.
Maybe you mean, what do you mean by vain? There's got to be more to that. Use a different word.
He was so focused on his hair and he fixed it up and it was so important to him.
Okay.
He forgot what really was important.
Okay. Our sages take it there and a step further. Again, if a big head of hair is a selfishness attribute, that's really what it is, right? It's all focused internals, right? You get conceited sometimes. That's really the word that you can apply when we talk about Avshalom. He was too clever for his own good. He became so focused on what he was so smart. He could outmaneuver. He can outduel. He can out anything, anybody. I got the goods. I'm smarter than all of them. He used his cleverness to trick David. He used all of these things to start his rebellion against David. His big fat head of hair made him conceited. If you think about it, it's not, I don't think it's a coincidence, but the head of hair is right next to your brain, not just to protect it, but it's there because sometimes we get too focused on it and we become too smart for our own good. Therefore, the sages point out, that the Navi points it out, he was hanged by his hair because that was his downfall. Not just because it was vain. Okay, a lot of people are vain, you know? Billion dollar industry. Because we're all so vain. With cosmetics and all the different things. Why? Because we're vain. We like to look good. We want to stay young. Right? Okay. It's not great, but it's not terrible. This is where you become so far conceited that you can't, like you said, you can't see anything beyond yourself. And you lose total focus. It was the cause of his vain intellect, if you'd like. Right? But definitely that was his issue.
So don't we sometimes say when someone is vain in that way that they're big-headed?
Yes.
Their head is too big.
Their head is too big. That's right. So maybe we should start a new expression, right? They're big-haired. Let's add a few other things here. Okay? Let's talk about Shimshon, Samson. Samson is the classic Nazirite. Now we need to take 2 minutes to understand something here, and I don't know if I'm going to do it justice. It's really a whole story that deserves probably 2 or 3 classes by itself to really understand the story of Samson. But suffice it to say the following. Shimshon was really destined for leadership already from his very beginning. If you know the story, his mother, while she was pregnant, I should say right before she became pregnant, was approached by an angel of God. And the angel told her that she is going to become pregnant and she needs to take upon herself this vow of Nazirite. No wine, nothing. Just really as if she herself was the Nazir. Why? Because the child she will be carrying will be a Nazirite from the day he's born. So she better start practicing so that in utero he's already in. Okay? He's destined for that leadership. He has a very unique role of leadership than any of the other judges and prophets of that time. Whereas all the other judges were clearly leaders that were recognized as leaders for the Jewish people, Samson's every step of his of war against the Philistines was with one objective, and that is he wanted to masquerade himself as if he were a lone rogue soldier. He's not doing it on behalf of the people. He's doing it on his own. He wanted all the Philistines to believe that, and he wanted the Jews to believe that. And therefore, every step of his, everything was calculated with the objective that he was going to wage this war. And if there were to be any retaliation by the Philistines, it wasn't against the Jewish people, it would be just against him. This was unique. Everything Shimshon did was calculated that the focus should be on whom? Him. Should he have a lot of hair or no hair?
A lot.
Yeah, a lot of hair.
Samson's hair was indicative of his role about it all being focused on him. The rouge that he had was that everyone should believe it's all him, not connected to the people. The secret of his strength was his hair. But at the end of the story, Delilah finds out what it is, right? And what does she do? Cuts off his hair. And what happens? Why? Why? See, now you understand. Because if the whole thing, the whole focus of Shimshon was to have the focus on him, not connected, but if the whole thing's a facade, the whole thing is a ruse. The minute the secret is out, the game's up.
His strength was his masquerade.
That's correct. That's correct. That's the strength to masquerade that it's all about him. Once that secret out, there's no more strength. Everybody figured out. Oh, it's for the Jewish people. That's it. He's done.
But God was the one who put that on him.
That's correct. So God did not want him to reveal that secret.
Correct.
Okay, so when he goes ahead and he basically said, I'm telling everybody the whole secret, God says, hello, that's the whole plan. Why are you telling the enemy that?
Right. What was God's purpose? Just to focus everything on him.
To give him that opportunity. That's right. So that it would be deflected away from the Jewish people. It would be all on him. And he single-handedly could have taken down the Philistines. It's a unique, and I'm oversimplifying it because it's quite a few chapters in the book of Judges, and it's worth reading. It's powerful, but you got to read it carefully. This is his story, so that there be no reprisals against the Jewish people. Once he gave away the secret, no more strength. That's why he has a whole boatload of hair. Not just because he's a Nazirite. This is the whole idea of this focus. It would explain also this woman who's taken as a captive of war. Right? The guy is overtaken with passion. He wants to have this non-Jewish woman. He wants to live with her. Right? And the Torah says, listen, I recognize the passion. I can't tell you no, but I want to give you a procedure to follow that you make sure that this is really what you want to do. So what does the Torah demand? One of the aspects is that before taking her as a wife, she has to shave her hair. Why? So Rashi says because you have to see her when she's not so pretty. Seriously, you know, in the heat of passion, when she's drop dead gorgeous and oh my God, this is like, right? Oh, mud pies, I love mud pies, right? Torah says, slow down, whoa, 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 slow down. Did you ever see her without makeup? You know, take a look. That's how Rashi learns and many others. But I want to suggest, and I don't remember if I saw this anywhere, but is he and she willing to commit to the ideal of living under Jewish law, Torah life, and being part of the Jewish community? Or are you going to be only focused on yourselves? Again, full head of hair is focused on you. Shaving means I'm dedicated and willing to commit to the community. Shave their head. Why? Are you willing to commit to be part of the community? Or are the two of you just going to be off and running on your own now? That's not a Torah way.
Both were shaved.
No, she. Well, he's love struck.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's not a fair. He's not love struck. He's in heat. What's the word? Infatuated. He's just infatuated with this beautiful woman, and he wants her right here, right now. Torah says, slow down. Is this really? Are you going to commit to this in the long term? To be part of the Torah team? To be part of a Jewish community? Or not? Hence the shaving. It would also explain, therefore, why we don't shave or take haircuts when a person is in mourning. When a person is in avel, when a person is in mourning, give me the classic picture when you think of somebody who's sitting shiva, God forbid, right? During that time period. And you walk into their house, first thing that hits you.
Unshaven, unclean.
Okay. Mirrors. In the house, what? Mirrors are covered. I thought someone was going to say there's always a bagel tray. Which, very true, but not really part of the custom, right? But the mirrors are covered. Why?
So that you shouldn't worry about your appearance.
Shouldn't worry about your appearance. What should you be worrying about?
how you feel about the person.
Right.
You are.
It's internals. It's all about the internals. Now's not the time to be focusing on all the million other things. Let your hair grow wild, not just because it's not so important, which is true, but it also is indicative. Remember, the more hair, the more
self.
The more you need to look within yourself. That's the mourning period. We have to look within ourselves about the person who passed away, what their legacy is, what did they mean to me, how am I going to incorporate their values. That's really what it's all about. And the same is true during the calendar time of mourning, whether it's during the Sfirat HaOmer, the counting of the Omer between Pesach and Shavuos, or during the 3 weeks in the summer. It's all about taking time to look inside ourselves. Yeah, when we're looking inside, your hair grows out. Let it grow. That's not the key. Look inside. It would also explain why the king has to get a haircut every day. Who is the most susceptible to the feelings of power? Of this is my kingdom, I'm calling the shots, you're gonna... Yeah, it's all the king. The king is the most at risk for being susceptible to power hungry, right? To a power grab. And if he gets a haircut every single day, what's it a reminder of? Yes, this is not, right? Remember, less hair, more community. That's right. He gets a haircut every single day to remind him, I love the term, public
service.
Public servant. Isn't that what we're supposed to be? You got a position of leadership in this country. Aren't they called public servants? Right? That's what it's supposed to be. They're there for the people. Yeah. From a Torah perspective, that's why the melech, the king, gets a haircut every day as a daily reminder. This is your community. This is your obligation. Step up and take care of the people. It's not about you. And since you are the most susceptible to the risk of being power hungry, you need that constant reminder. It would also explain, perhaps, why our hair is dark when we're younger and whiter when we get older. Typically, if you have hair. Why is that? Some people get white. Okay? But what's interesting is that the colors black and white. It's interesting. I don't want to get too far into it, but Kabbalistically, there's a lot to be said about this. The color black, they always tell you, in the summertime, don't wear black. Why?
Because it absorbs heat.
Because it absorbs heat and doesn't...
Cool.
Doesn't give out. It doesn't give the ability to let it back out. The lighter colors, yes, they take it in, but they also allow it to go back out. That's why it's cooler. That's why you wear lighter colors in the summer. If the dark color represents the ability to keep taking in, receiving, and no giving, does that represent youth or does that represent old age? Oh, that's youth. That is correct. That is youth. Now, of course, as we get older, we become a little less able and we need help. That is true. But more classic, right, of taking in and not giving out is younger age. And therefore, the hair, which is symbolic of self, is darker when we're younger. As we mature, as we learn to give of ourselves more and more, yes, our hair turns a lighter color so that we continue to have the message that I'm at a different stage of my life. Maybe in my younger years, I was focused on me, my family, providing. It's all true. But as I get older, I play a different role. I'm there to give guidance. I'm there to be a help to the community. I don't have the same needs I did when I was 35. Maybe that's why it turns white. White is a symbol of rachamim, mercy, and chesed. Black is a symbol of din, justice, gevura, strength. It absorbs the rays of sun and doesn't give it back. The selfish youth, as opposed to the older, right, where it shines back all the colors. The Kohen Gadol, the great high priest, What color did he wear when he went into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur?
White.
Because it's focused on the community, not him. Whatever, it's not for now, but the Talmud says that there was the great high priest who knew that this was his last year to do it. And they asked him how he knew that. He said, "My time is up." And he said, "How did you know?" He says, "Every year when I would go into the Holy of Holies, I would have this vision of a man in white that came to see me and describing whatever it was." And he says, "And this year when I went in, I saw him in black." I knew that that means I no longer can see the merits of the people, not representing the community anymore. This is not my position anymore. Black is absorbing selfishness. White is allowing out, focused on others. It would also explain maybe why we lose our hair as we get older. Maybe. It's because maybe as we get older, we also begin to understand our responsibility towards others more. And again, we don't have the same things that hold us back as far as family, as far as responsibility. I have more time to help. Maybe that's a reminder for us. Finally, there's really so much more I want to say, but let's add one last piece. Someone had asked about peyos, right? The hair that we let grow down the side. So let's just go over the basic halacha, the basic laws. Are you not allowed to round off? That's the terminology. To round off the corner of your head, which is this part, which means you're supposed to leave hair growing till the bone. Right? Feel your jawbone back here? Right? That's where it should be. It shouldn't go higher than that. Okay? There are those, and I'm sure everybody here has seen, certain groups of within Hasidic circles that not only don't cut it at all, I mean, don't cut above the bone, they won't cut this part at all. They'll let it grow, tuck it behind their ears, or they'll let it grow long and then they start twirling it so that it's nice down. These are all part of the same mitzvah. But let's discuss. What does the word peya come from? Peyos is plural, peya is single. Where's the word come from? That's cute, from piety, but I don't think so. There's a mitzvah, a biblical mitzvah in the Torah called peya.
Leaving the corners of your field.
Oh, leaving the corners of your field. Very good. The law is that in the agricultural society in which we were for many, many, many centuries, right? The law was that when you grew your produce, there were certain basic requirements of charity. Some of it you give to the Kohen, a percentage you give to the Levites, a percentage you give to the poor. Some years, a percentage you took yourself up to Jerusalem to eat with your family, depending on what cycle. But there were also other laws about when you gathered them. If you're bundling all of your stuff together and a few strands fall to the ground, the Torah says, don't bend down to get them. Leave them for the poor. You have bundles. And you're gathering the bundles, and one or two of those bundles fall to the ground. Leave them. Leave them for the poor. And then there's something called peya. Peya means a corner. A corner of your field. You leave alone. Hands off. It belongs to whom?
The poor.
The poor. Anybody can go ahead and take it. Who needs it? But what's fascinating... fascinating about this law is that it's different than any other agricultural law. See, let's say, for example, I'm the farmer and my apple orchard produces 100 bushels of apples. Okay? Nice, easy math. 100 bushels of apples. So I'm supposed to give a certain percentage of those bushels to the Kohen, certain percentage to the Levites. Okay? I go ahead and I take, let's say for argument's sake, I'll take 2 bushels and I'm going to give it to the Kohen. Which Kohen? Which coin should I give it to?
Leonard.
Huh? Which coin? Does it say anywhere who I have to give it to?
I don't think it does, but probably the one closest to you.
Well, lucky guy who's living near me, because I got 100 bushels. So, the law is, I, as the owner of the field, can decide which Cohen I want to give it to. It doesn't have to be the closest one. I have a close relationship with Cohen X. I can choose to give it to Cohen X. If I decide the next year I'm going to give it to Cohen Y, then I give it to Cohen Y. I retain that little extent of ownership that I can decide to whom I give it. The same for the Levites. And this is true with all agricultural stuff. I retain a tiny little bit, some right. I'm an active participant in that mitzvah. I'm a master of it still to some extent. Not when it comes to peah. When it comes to the corner of your field, you are zero. You are irrelevant. You are a big, fat, garnished. You know what that is? Nothing. You're a big, fat, irrelevant nothing. You do not decide who gets to go there, who does not. In fact, it's the other way around. The only thing the Torah tells us is that you are to forsake it. You give up and relinquish ownership to that corner. Who comes in? That's whoever poor person who wants to come in can come in. You have zero left. There's nothing in it as it relates to you. They are the masters of the field. You are irrelevant.
Is it, how do you choose which corner? Is it done before you plant?
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards?
Mm-hmm. You have to leave a certain percentage of the corners.
Of all the corners? Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, I don't want to get too into that. You may be even able to calculate and say, okay, instead of it being all four corners, I'm just going to take a larger piece of this corner. There's all different. There's an entire tractate devoted to this section. Okay? Called Peah, interestingly enough. Okay? But let's end with this. The message is so beautiful. When a person leaves a Peah, when a person leaves that corner, it's a reminder that the entire field is not yours. Yes, for the majority of it, you have, to some extent, rights to say who to give it to. A Cohen, a Levi, whichever one you want. But at the end of the day, who owns that field? God does. It's not yours. He's giving you custodial rights, but it belongs to God. And the same is therefore true when we leave our Peah. When we leave our corner of our head, of our hair, we leave a part of it over to say, yeah, it's a reminder that everything inside here, all the gifts of my knowledge, all the gifts of my talents, all the gifts of my abilities, my wisdom, whatever is in here that translate throughout the rest of my body is also not really mine. It's a gift. It's a gift from God. And I leave a corner of my head. I leave a corner of my hair open to remind me that all my intellect, my abilities is not really ours. We're not the masters. It all belongs and comes from God. It's not surprising, therefore, that the word Peah has the same numerical value as Elohim, as God. That's what it is. When we leave that little corner, it's a reminder. Good. Now I can begin to understand why they don't cut it at all. Because, okay, they're taking it to another degree. But the concept that I leave a corner of my head, a corner of my field, open to remind me of that is exactly what this is all about. So question, and then we'll summarize.
I seem to recall somewhere in literature it says that Peah is one of the mitzvos without measure.
Correct. You're talking about a Mishnah. Mishnah Peah. Right? We say it right in the beginning brachot, right before the Birchat HaShachar. Elu Devarim, these are the things she'ein lahem shiur, that has no official measurement on a biblical level. The rabbis gave certain measurements so that we know what's appropriate and what's not. But Peah is one of those. If you want to leave half of your field as your corner, you're welcome to do that biblically. But correct. Can I throw one more thing at you? You ever hear of a man by the name of Korach? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is he? Who is he?
He led the rebellion against Moses.
Good. He led a rebellion against Moses and Aaron about the leadership. Right?
He said they were being selfish by being leaders.
Fantabulous. They were saying they took all the leadership positions to themselves. They were being selfish, right? And he wanted a piece of it. Interesting, right? So he mounts a whole rebellion with the great leaders of that generation. And he loses ultimately, right? This is where the earth opens up, swallows Korach and all of his assembly, and everything gets swallowed up. But interesting, his name is Korach. What's Kereach? Same word, just vowelized a little different. Anybody know what Kerach in Hebrew is? Same word. Kuf Resh Chet. Ice. Kerach is ice. Kereach is as smooth as ice, otherwise known as bald. Bald. Kereach means bald. Korach's name is bald. Say, so what is up with that? Listen to a Medrash. The Medrash says that Korach had a problem. I told you that the Levites were being asked in their initiation to be shaved. And which was a symbol of, I'm willing to submit myself to be at the service of others. I humbly submit myself as a public servant. Think Korach has a problem with that? Korach has a major problem with that. And he doesn't understand, why do we have to be shaven? His whole argument is, we're all holy. We don't need a hierarchy. We don't need to submit ourselves to anybody. Not you, Moses. Not you, Aaron. We're all holy people by ourselves. Don't need any of this. No submission to anyone or anything. He wouldn't go along with the shaving. What's the big deal? It grows. Grows back. Right? I had a terrible... He was a Levite. Korach was a Levite. I remember as a kid, I had a terrible haircut. Somebody butchered me, but good. And I was devastated. I looked terrible, and I knew the kids in my class were going to laugh, and they did. But my mother just kept reiterating, don't worry, sweetie, it'll all grow back. It'll all grow back. Tell Korach, chill out. It'll all grow back. No, he doesn't want to hear of it. Why? Because that means he has to submit himself. No. He's all into it. He just wants the leadership role. That's all he wants. So what do we have? Let's just summarize quickly. The concept of hair on our head is a protection. It is. It's to protect our head. It's a symbol of understanding that the wisdom within our heads is a gift that needs to be protected. If you let your hair grow wild and it grows so big and it's like a Nazirite, right? A Nazir, like Samson. It's a concept of internal focusing, of where you're putting up this protective field, a force field, a shield of some sort that doesn't let any outside influences. If you're a Nazir, you're doing it for the right reason because you got to get your affairs in order. You need to take the time to look inside yourself to make sure you've got it straight. That's fine. The Torah says, okay. In that sense, it's okay to be selfish for a short period of time till you get it all straight again. But then, shave and get back into the community. Be a part of society. Be a productive member of society. Not like Esau, who was born hairy. He was born hairy because it was all about him. Selfish, from day one. Esau, from the word asu, done. Made complete from day one. It explains also why Avshalom. Avshalom had the big bushy hair. Samson, we talked about it. We talked about the fact that a Metzora, the leper who finally was outside, got himself cleared out, shaved before he came back in the community. The shaven head is a symbol of humility, a symbol of submission. I will work for others. I want to be there for others. That's why Yosef was I don't know what the right word is, right? It was pointed out his flaw at that point that he was immature. He was too focused on his hair. A king has to cut his hair every day to remind him he's a public servant. What we need to walk away with this is understanding that, yes, hair is one of those things that we don't have much say over. We don't get to choose its color. We don't get to choose when it falls out. We don't get to choose when it changes color either, right? But the word sa'ar, which is hair, is also sha'ar. It's a gate. This is what we'll end with. Sha'ar, it's the gate. What's it a gate towards?
Heaven.
What's it a gate of? What's the function of a gate?
To let you in.
That's right. To allow things to either go in or go out. The gate for us is our hair. Do we look at it and let the hair grow wild of where we're closing the gate to everyone and anything else? Or is it a keep it open, an open gate so that we can help others, serve the community, whatever it takes? That's what hair symbolizes. It's pretty fascinating. It's a little bit out there. Any questions? And no, I don't know when it will change and fall out. Okay. All right. We'll pick up the next one next week. Thanks for staying with us a little longer. Have a great night.